We're continuing our conversation about Revelation in the LDS Church. One of Mormonism's most important and well-known revelations deals with the Word of Wisdom, Mormonism's health code. Dr. Greg Prince talks about a naturalistic view of how that revelation was received. I think it's pretty surprising. We'll also tell some stories about President McKay. Did he prefer Coke or Pepsi? Check out our conversation. Another thing that gets short shrift in the Word of Wisdom is about meat and hot drinks. What does Greg have to say about that? It's going to be a very fun conversation. I hope you join us. Before you do, I just want to mention a couple of things. Adam and Robert are frequently liking our Facebook posts, and I want to thank you for doing that. The more people that like them, the more people that will see them. So please continue to like our posts. I've also noticed it seems like we get more comments on our YouTube channel. Ricardo and Angie asked a couple of questions that I think are very interesting. So check out that. And please give me some feedback, whether it's on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Facebook. I'd love to hear what you guys think about our conversations and if you have any comments or questions. Also, let me know who else you'd like to talk to. Now back to our conversation.
If you look at the Word of Wisdom, how many people have recreated what the conventional wisdom of 1833 was in the United States about temperance?
So I just heard Locke Mackay give a wonderful Sunday school lesson on that very topic, which I thought was fascinating. talking about the difference between temperance and prohibition. And he made the case that those are different and that the Word of Wisdom really doesn't forbid alcohol. And that's really more of a Heber J. Grant thing. Again, just like with the gay issue, with a reaction to the rescission of prohibition.
Well, you have, I think, three phases of Word of Wisdom evolution. Phase one is when Joseph writes it down, but nobody pays much attention to it. Phase two is when the saints get out to the Salt Lake Valley and hard cash is scarce and Brigham's trying to conserve it. And so he comes down hard on the importing of luxury goods from the East, because that takes scarce cash out of Utah and doesn't replace it. Well, what are those scarce goods? Primarily tea, coffee, some tobacco, and distilled liquor. So that's when he really came down hard. This is an article in the very first issue of Brigham Young University Studies written by Leonard Arrington called Economic Aspects of the Word of Wisdom. And it makes a very strong, credible case that that era of Word of Wisdom enforcement was done for the very pragmatic reason of trying to preserve capital within Utah territory. Oh, wow. Then you get into the Heber Grant era where he just becomes a stickler and takes a hard line on it and makes pronouncements that would have had no context when the Word of Wisdom was given, because, for instance, there was no such thing as a carbonated drink or even a cold drink. If there had been iced drinks, probably the Word of Wisdom would have said no hot drinks and no iced drinks, because the whole notion was temperance, moderation. Find the center ground, the comfort zone, and stay there. Don't go this way, don't go that way. I've got in my library about 7 linear feet of publications that predate February 27, 1833, that deal with temperance. And to the smallest detail, what's in the Word of Wisdom, it's been out there for years. You will hear people still who say, well, the Word of Wisdom proves that Joseph was a prophet because it was 100 years ahead of its time. It wasn't even a day ahead of its time. It reflected what everybody already knew. This was the air that they breathed. The temperance movement kicked in 1826 because there was an epidemic of drunkenness in the United States. The consumption of distilled liquor over a 30-year period had tripled on a per capita basis. Drunkenness became a national security issue. That's why the American Temperance Society was formed in 1826.
So tripled between what year and what year?
In the 30 years prior to 1826.
Okay.
So the temperance movement initially was focused mostly on alcohol, but not all of that. And all of these other things, including the good and the bad, were out there in the public press in the general public press, this wasn't in medical journals exclusively, saying, here's what you want to do to have a temperate life. It's all in there. Well, if you don't recreate that environment to the best that you can, then people are clueless as to what the real context of the Word of Wisdom was. It said strong drinks because that's what was getting guys into trouble. It was distilled spirits. It wasn't wine. It wasn't beer. And in fact, Danish beer was still okay for the Danish general authorities through the early decades of the 20th century. They decided in the first presidency they wouldn't deny them a temple recommend because they were still drinking Danish beer because that was mother's milk to them. They didn't have the heart to pull the plug on that one until Grant did it finally.
And it wasn't a reaction to Utah, of all states.
Yeah, so when they're saying strong drink, it didn't mean anything with alcohol in it. It meant distilled spirits. It didn't mean wine. It didn't mean beer. When they said hot drinks, they meant drinks that were hot. It wasn't what was in them. People didn't drink hot chocolate. They only drank two hot drinks, coffee and tea. But it wasn't the content. It was the temperature. It moved you out of that zone of moderation, out of temperance. Later, they decided, oh, it's because they got caffeine. And then they get into this squabble back in the 40s of, well, okay, so if we have Sanka, which was the first decaffeinated coffee, are we okay? And they kind of went back and forth and never really took a hard line on it. And then, you know, we get into subsequent decades, and for some of the Orthodox, they won't touch a caffeinated Coke, but they'll take a non-caffeinated Coke and an Excedrin, and that's fine, which has more caffeine than Coke does.
Well, I've actually heard, my wife is, she does not drink any caffeine unless she gets a migraine, and it cures her migraines, yeah. Which would be Excedrin as well, I guess.
Yeah. The same thing about the fresh vegetables and grains, you know, produce in its season. Well, that was a good recommendation then, it still is. Red meats, well, you see, that takes you out of your temperance zone, because red meat will stimulate you. And you don't want to be overstimulated because you're moving out of the zone. Except if it's cold outside, then you need a little extra stimulation. Or if there's a famine in the land, you need a little extra stimulation. So, all right, then bring the red meat in there. See? But if you understand all of that, and if you understand that that was the conventional wisdom, that's what the people in the streets heard about and believed and to a large extent followed, then you see the Word of Wisdom is just kind of extending that same recommendation to the Mormons. It didn't take it any further than the American Temperance Society had taken it. And Lester Bush first pointed out to me decades ago, he said, you know, if the Lord had wanted to save lives with the Word of Wisdom, why didn't he say, boil your water? Because until the cigarette-making machine was invented in the first decade of the 20th century, the Word of Wisdom didn't save lives. Before that, when you had to roll your own, people didn't smoke enough for a long enough period, because they tended to die of infectious diseases, that they were getting lung cancer. What was killing them was mostly waterborne bacteria, which could have been killed if they had boiled the water. Oh, well.
So this is interesting to hear, because it sounds like a very naturalistic explanation for the Word of Wisdom. And I guess some would say, well, is that really revelation then? Or is that just the thinking of the day?
You get into the circular argument on that. Is something revelation because we call it revelation? Or is the nature of the something what later qualifies it as being revelation? If you're looking for the splitting the ceiling and the voice of the Lord dropping through type revelation, how many instances of that do we have within the LDS tradition?
Not very many.
Any? Even the revelation on priesthood, it's not that kind. It's not the voice of God penetrating the temple. Yes, it is described by some who are there as a Pentecostal experience. That's different, though. So what is the nature of revelation? And that turns out to be a very difficult thing to pin down. One thing that you can pretty much say across the board is revelation is more process than event. In the words of Stephen Gould, the biologist, the evolutionary biologist, he described evolution as punctuated equilibrium. That you have kind of a steady state, and then you have some cataclysmic events, and you have these spikes of evolution. That turns out not quite to have held up the way that he would have liked to have it hold up, but it's an interesting image, and I think that the reality in our historical record says that that's a good model to explain some of the things we've gone through. That there's a process that's pretty much steady state, and then it may be punctuated by an event here and there that is a game changer. Look in the earliest days of the church at some of the visions and how they changed things in pretty short order, like the vision of the 3 degrees of glory, or the later vision of the celestial kingdom.
All right, well, the last thing I want to just talk about as far as Word of Wisdom is concerned, can you tell the story about President McKay and both Coke and rum cake? I think that's a great story.
He loved rum cake. That's that story. The story about Coke is that when there was still the Valley Music Hall out in Bountiful, mm-hmm. which now is a multi-stake center.
Elder Ballard used to own didn't he?
It was. It was one of several across the country, all built at the same time by the same company. It was a theater in the round. There was one in Maryland that was torn down several years after we moved back there, but we went to a couple of events there, and it was pretty much a clone of the one out here. So the guy who told me this was a BYU student at the time, but he was doing publicity for the theater, and they had invited the McKays to a performance there. So it was his job to pick up the McKays, take them there. He got them seated before the crowd came in and said, I'd be happy to get you some refreshments now, but I have to apologize for one thing, and that is by contract, the paper cups that we use for our soft drinks are Coca-Cola cups. So if I can get you a beer, I can get you orange, I can get you Sprite, whatever. And he said, President McKay looked up at him and said, what's on the cup doesn't matter so long as what's in the cup is a Coke. Now, that's what's in the book. Before the book was published, I was chatting with one of the secretaries who had worked in President McKay's office. She was still alive because she went to work for him right after she got off her mission. So she was much younger than the other secretaries in that office. And I gave her the first, well, whatever chapter it was that had that Coke anecdote in it, I gave it to her, and I was a little nervous because she's a very conservative woman. And she read that, and she said, that's not correct. And I said, I mean, it's not correct. You know the guy who gave me that story. And she says, well, let me tell you. She says, I was up in the apartment with President McKay one time, and he said, would you go into the other room, into the kitchen, and get me a soda? It's in the refrigerator. And she said, certainly. So I walked in, opened the refrigerator, and there was a whole shelf full of Pepsis.
So President Kay was a Pepsi man.
I think he was versatile.
Okay, so there's that other story about rum cake.
Yeah, that he was at a party and he enjoyed rum cake. If you can eat it with a fork, it's okay, I guess.
So, I mean, if I recall from your book, I think this is the quote, that it said something to the effect that there's no problem with eating alcohol, it's drinking it that's the problem.
Yeah, same idea. Eat it with a fork, and you're okay.
So I just think most people, and the funny thing is now we have this new, BYU finally is allowing Coke on campus.
Yeah, suddenly there is a demand for it where there wasn't a demand before.
I understand it's still not a demand at BYU-Idaho, though. It's still prohibited. I guess the BYU-Idaho students need
it
to
might be part of the application that they file when they want to go there. Do you have an appetite for Coca-Cola with caffeine? And if they say no, then they get sent to BYU-Idaho. Maybe that's what's going on.
There was one other quote. We'll just finish this up there. It seems like there was a question about chocolate. Chocolate has caffeine in it.
John Widso wanted there to be a ban on chocolate. His wife, Leah Widso, was a health fanatic. The two of them wrote a book on the Word of Wisdom. And I think it was a priesthood manual back in the 30s. And the anecdotal story that I have heard from more than one source is that when Widso suggested that maybe this should be put on the prohibited list, that McKay's response was, "Do you want to take all the fun out of life, John?"
Love that. Love that. Yeah.
It was a much more relaxed church.
Sometimes I wish it was a little more relaxed now, but
these things tend to be cyclical, although the length of the cycles is sometimes way too long for our patients.
Yes. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Greg Prince. Aaronic priesthood young men have primarily been responsible for preparing, blessing, and passing the sacrament. How has that changed over the years? That's what we'll talk about in our next conversation, and Greg Prince will tell a very interesting story.
He comes out to meetings regularly. He's part of the deacon's quorum. He's not a member. Would it be okay if he passed the sacrament? Yeah, it'd be okay.
Oh, really? This is what year?
This was in the 30s.
In the 1930s. Click here to subscribe. Click here for a transcript. And over here, you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.